You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is Commander Tom Garcia. I'm back from vacation, as well as is Paula. Paula, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great today. We've got a lot of rain up here in the Boston area with a real feel temperature of 65.
Oh, boy. Wow. Doesn't sound like an August day, but yeah, we've got a lot of rain down here in South Florida too right now, thank goodness, because we're having such a drought. I think I mentioned on a show before we went on vacation that the lake behind my house was really, really low, and it's almost full again now, so we got a lot of rain just in the last few weeks. So that's great. And we've got a guest coming on today that is putting together the first Florida statewide Tea Party convention. So she calls in, we'll bring her on. And Dick Bierenbach, our good friend, has already called in, and he helped arrange this. How are you doing today, Dick?
I'm doing good. Hello, Paula.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah.
Good, thank you.
So in any case, we're going to be at that, just so everybody knows, November 4th, 5th, and 6th. If you go on to their website, and I'm going to give you the address right here. It's go to ttpnc.com. I'm going to do that phonetically. It's Tango Tango Papa November Charlie.com, and it's the Tea Party Florida Convention, 4th, 5th, and 6th in Daytona Beach. And I don't know where. Oh, it's going to be at the hotel. It's going to be at the Hilton Daytona Beach Oceanfront Resort. And I think I may
have seen
that hotel.
No, sir.
No?
No, Tom. No, it'll be across the street from that at the convention center on US 1.
Okay, so it is at the convention center. Okay, great. I'm just trying to read this from
the
yeah, so you can stay at that hotel. That's the hotel that's supposedly given a discount or whatever, but there's plenty of hotels in the area, although I would suggest anybody going up there, and I need to do this myself, is get a room quickly, because when there's a convention in town, the hotels go fast and expensive. So make sure that you check into that right away. There are tickets also required. Sounds like we got to verify it, but it sounds like we're going to have a booth there for the American Hour. And I'm assuming you'll be able to swing on by and spend some time with us, Dick, since you live right in the area. But we'll be doing interviews, we'll be broadcasting live, and we'll eventually get a schedule out on that for how we're going to win. You can listen in and listen to interviews with some of the Tea Partiers there. And it looks like an all-cast lineup, all-star cast lineup here of folks. Some of them I know. Pam Bondi, who just got elected to Attorney General in the recent election, is one of them. Franz Cabreau, who was one of the first people, if not, I'm trying to remember now, the very first guest, I believe, that I ever had on the show, Franz Cabreau. And, of course, there's links to his website on our website. If you go to usaradionetwork.com, you'll see the different links for sponsors and people that we've had on the show that have a great product or something that is important. And then, of course, Sheriff Richard Mack is going to be there to speak as well. And I don't know if there are going to be any other speakers, but we'll ask Pam when she gets on. And I believe that she has called in. Nope. We got a call from Steve in Indianapolis who wants to comment about Ron Paul. So we'll get to you in just a moment, Steve. Hang in there. So the Florida Tea Party Convention, that's November 4th, 5th, and 6th. We're going to talk to Pam today about it, and I know she's been real busy setting that up and what the highlights of that are going to be and why somebody should come and attend that. And if you're living in another state and you haven't had a convention, whether it be a Tea Party or a Patriot Convention or anything like that, you know, work with whatever groups that you're affiliated with and see if you can make that happen, because it can make a difference. It will get media attention, and these events are always quite
civil. Let me interrupt for just a second.
Yeah, go ahead,
Dave. Pam Dahl will be calling in from a 352 exchange. Here you go.
352. Okay, we'll look out for that. Yeah. We get it.
Yeah.
But so before we continue on here. Paula, since we've been gone for a couple weeks here, is there anything in particular, I'm going to give you a few minutes to run with it, anything in particular that's caught your eye? I know you've been busy with other work, but anything that's really stood out to you news-wise, current events, et cetera?
Well, I mean, the straw poll was held this weekend, and we see that our friend Michelle Bachmann has taken the lead and that Ron Paul came in second, which was surprising to me. I don't know whether it was with anybody else. Rick Perry's in. Polenti's out. our good friend there, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, was on Face the Nation this weekend talking about how Obama still has widespread support, and even though his ratings have dropped, you know, he's still in an actually remarkably good shape, given that he is still struggling to help pull our economy out of the Republican recession that he inherited. She says that his numbers are still strong.
Yeah, you know, this whole inherited thing is just makes my stomach turn. And before I comment on that, I just want to throw this out there. Steve, who called in and wanted to talk about Ron Paul, I've obviously been on vacation for a few weeks because instead of going over to chat with him briefly, there he is, he's back. Thanks. I'm going to go chat with him for a second, but I hung up on him instead of talking with him. But I'll let you continue on, Paula.
Oh, no, you know, and she put the blame of the economy on former President George W., saying that, you know, the current president inherited the worst recession that we've had since the Great Depression, created by the policies, the failed policies of the previous Republican administration, where we went from a record surplus to a record deficit. So, you know, she feels that we've begun to turn things around, and we acknowledge that we have a long way to go, and we are certainly no longer in a free fall. I don't know about anybody else, but even though the gasoline prices, they're saying, are gone down, you know, 30 cents a gallon, to put the $70 a month in the consumer pocket for spending, I don't see that as not being in a free fall, because I'm not going to go out and spend the $70 a month that they're alleging that I'm going to save. I'm going to take it and continue to pay down my debt or put it in savings. You know, how are you feeling about that, Dick?
I think that there's an awful lot of psychiatrists that should sit down and have a good talk to her and maybe find a nice, comfortable hospital for her.
Yeah.
Because I think she's lost her marbles. In fact, she never had marbles to lose.
I think she just lives in. I don't, not to say a fog, but I don't know. Maybe it's like a different mindset that she lives in. That she doesn't. I don't think she's in touch with reality. She needs to get
what
out.
What I'm seeing on the internet is she should maybe talk to a few other Democrats up there in Washington, because there's a few of them that are starting to talk impeachment.
Oh.
Yeah, that would be in order for a few things, as well as somebody run against him in the primary. That would be just great for the election.
Yeah.
But they really hate that. Nobody ever wants to do that, but there may be enough. You know, it's sort of like when, what's his name, he used to head up IBM, ran against, who was it, Bush at the time, or Dole, or whatever it was, you know, the guy I'm talking about, who ran as an independent, and it takes votes away from Republicans. It rarely takes that many votes from Democrats, so it's never good, really, to have a third-party candidate. As much as people want, oh, we need another party, we need a real, true conservative party, yeah, you just need to turn the Republican Party into a conservative party, but in any case, we got Steve on the line here from, I don't remember where he's calling in from, but he's called in before. He wanted to mention something about Ron Paul, and I think it's probably an appropriate time to discuss Ron Paul just briefly here. But, Steve, go ahead. What was your comment on Ron Paul?
You know, for the last 60 years, if you really look at the last president to balance the budget under Republican, it was Dwight Eisenhower. It's been 60 years ago, 60 years. So, you know, people don't want to vote for Ron Paul, but at the same time, these mainstream Republicans have been running up the credit card. They've been acting like rhinos and passing prescription drug plans and just doing all these things destructive to the economy, and it takes almost a radical guy to just totally, you know, flip America upside down. You know, 800 bases all around the world. You know, a lot of things we do at these military bases, you can use mercenaries. I mean, they're just working in warehouses and doing different jobs. And we've got bases in rich nations, and nobody wants to – it's like everybody wants everything. We've got $11 trillion over the next 10 years in tax deductions that I think probably going to end up getting eliminated because Social Security is just unpopular to cut. And so it's like they don't want Ron Paul – but at the same time, they want a president that acts like Ron Paul. Well, I'm like, well, if you want a president to act like Ron Paul but is not Ron Paul, then vote for Ron Paul. I just don't get it. Yeah. It's like it's been 60 years. You've had 60 years to balance the budget. Even Reagan ran up the credit card. What makes you think, okay, what makes people think they're going to be able to recognize a rhino when they've had 60 years of not being able to recognize a rhino?
Well, I agree.
So can you talk about that?
Well, let me ask you this, Steve. How do you feel about Ron Paul's position on national security?
Well, see, this is the thing. People always forget this. We have nuclear weapons, folks. We keep doing land-based wars. They're very expensive, and they're getting old, and it costs a lot of money that we don't have. We spend $1.6 trillion in military, especially. They do off-budget military spending. And a lot of people don't know that central banks also send money that we have no way of knowing, and they're spending money that we don't have and inflating our dollar. And so we have all this off-budget accounting going on. We have all this military spending going on. We have nukes. There's serious consequences. We can nuke an entire country from orbit in space. We do not need a large military. We can use mercenaries for a fifth of the cost. You know how much these veteran benefits and all this stuff costs? There's poor guys all over the country who love to join our military for a fifth of the cost and learn English language and be a mercenary and go in there in our warehouses and do most of the work that a regular civilian could do. But what I'm saying is people don't want to vote for Ron Paul, but they want a guy to act like Ron Paul. And I'm totally confused. They're talking about Rick Perry. Rick Perry loves illegal immigrants. They're running up the health care costs, going to the emergency room, having babies. And you think Rick Perry's the solution?
Yeah.
I'm confused.
I agree with you on that. I'll give you my take on Ron Paul. One, we're talking about – I ran a congressional race, so I know how this stuff works. It doesn't make it right. Understand me. It doesn't make it right. But the uninformed masses are going to look at a guy his age, the way he speaks, not what he's speaking about, substance, and he's just not going to be able to generate enough votes. Now, I also do believe in integrity and voting for the right person. My personal belief is when it comes to the military and national security, Ron Paul is too extreme on that. I served for 22 years. I know there's a lot of waste in the military, and I agree with you about closing down a lot of these bases overseas. But I can also tell you as a career military officer, mercenaries don't work. That's a bad, bad way to go to manage our national security abroad is to have mercenaries. It does not bode well for military. You got to have people in there that have skin in the game. So. But now, when it comes to Ron Paul's take on the Constitution and the economy and our government and the size of our federal government and the sovereignty of state governments, he's right on all of those issues. So I like him for that, but I honestly don't think he can generate enough votes to win. And if he were the nominee, the Democrats, being the scum that they are going to really try and smear him as an individual versus debate him on substance. And it's not that they can't smear anybody else, but they're going to portray him as a kook. And I'm just telling you, the masses aren't going to vote for him, unfortunately.
Yeah. He needs to bring up the nuclear weapons. Can you still hear me pretty good?
Yeah. So
he needs to speak about the nuclear weapons and how we keep doing land-based wars.
I don't know how old you are, Steve, but the
Pentagon budget is causing inflation. The Pentagon budget is causing it. They're spending money off the books.
Here's the problem with the nuclear weapon issue. China and Russia have the same nuclear, first strike type policies that we do. And that is, if China were to nuke an entire nation, Our own policy in the military and in our federal government is they can now not be trusted, and we have to nuke them. Now, if it's a tactical nuke, that kind of thing, but to blow up an entire country. So for us to say we're going to use nukes, and then some country like Iran is causing a problem to where we normally would have just attacked them and dropped some bombs on them, but now we nuke them, we run the risk of being obliterated by China and or Russia. Because that's
I think Israel's going to nuke them anyway. I think Israel's already going to nuke them.
I think they'll use conventional weapons. I don't think they'll use a nuclear weapon, Israel. I doubt
We keep doing land-based wars. I'm confused. See, I thought the whole purpose of nuclear weapons so we going to have to keep doing these land-based wars.
The only purpose for having nuclear weapons is to ensure that the countries that do have nuclear weapons won't ever use them on us because we'll obliterate them too. That's the only reason you have nuclear weapons. It's not to win wars or take out rogue countries or anything like that. Now, what is confusing you is that instead of us going up in and blowing up the bad guys or whatever it is we need and getting out of there, we've now become a nation builder where we take our military into a country. And you've seen how quickly we destroyed Saddam's army, destroyed the Taliban, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
We can do that in a matter of days, literally obliterated entire military in any of these Middle Eastern countries in a matter of days, and then leave. But we've taken it upon ourselves to then go in there and stabilize the country because we wouldn't want anybody to think we just smacked them around and then didn't take care of them afterwards. It's that take care of them afterwards that turns into a whole war of itself, and that's what we've got to get away from. If we really absolutely no other options have to go in and whack somebody in another country, then we just need to do that and get out of there. No more nation building, because we go about it, and I've done shows on this, and call in another time, Steve, when we're just kind of talking about current events, because we got our guest just called in. I'll explain to you how and why the way we've managed, even if we're going to stay in Iraq and Afghanistan, the way we've managed it is tactically and strategically insane, and it's not the way to do it. But we have politicians that don't understand strategy and tactics in the military, and they're directing the generals and admirals to do things that prolong our activity there. So in any case, Steve, thanks for calling in. Call in anytime. It's good hearing from you again.
Okay.
And hello to everybody in Indianapolis for us.
All right. Be blessed. All right.
Thanks, Steve. Bye. All right. Pam Dahl has called in, and I know she's a busy lady. Let's, if I can get her on here. My switchboard is a little slow today. Pam, how are you doing today?
I'm fine. How are you?
Great. Listen, we already did a little intro about the Tea Party Florida Convention. I gave them the dates. I gave them the website to go to, TTPNC. So that's Tango Tango Papa November Charlie.com. Go there, find out more information about it. But what do people need to know about this convention? What are the highlights? I've talked about a few of the speakers and any other information you want to put out there.
Well, this isn't a convention that you're going to go to and hear the same old thing about what the problems are with our country. This is a convention where you're going to go and get answers, answers that have been proven during the 2010 elections. You're going to hear about what we all need to do, who we need to contact, how often we need to contact, and how hard we all have to work at this, because the Democrats are certainly getting out there and working hard, too.
Yeah,
so
they're working hard at lying
to,
about everything they do, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah.
But
we
love going after that on the show, all their lies. I swear, every time we do a show, it's a whole list of lies that the Democrats put out
there. Alan Grayson's
out
there right now just spotting off like crazy. He was just down here on Saturdays. But you know what's so interesting is when you walk into the meeting, not one person has any kind of a hat or shirt that showed that they were in the armed services. Nothing patriotic is on them. It's really so different than going to a regular Tea Party meeting or a Republican Party meeting.
You got it. And I've been a member of numerous Tea Party patriot groups. Remember the We Surround Them groups that started up a few years ago, and I think they kind of switched their names over to one of the other groups. But they're the same group, and I've never seen more patriotic people in my life. So when these Democrats come out and call Tea Partiers racist and, extreme, et cetera, my answer always is this. I sit in a room with Tea Party people that are a variety of colors and ethnic backgrounds, et cetera, and we don't care about that. That's why I'm not even going to name the kinds of things I'm talking about, but all kinds of different backgrounds, especially military backgrounds. And
oh, yeah.
When I took my oath of office, I did it a couple times, but once as a midshipman and then once as an officer in the Navy. When I took my oath of office, it wasn't just to protect and defend the Constitution, because liberals can't even tell you what's in that oath of office. But the very next line after protect and defend the Constitution is to bear true faith and allegiance to it. And that's the difference. We conservatives bear true faith and allegiance. In other words, we believe in it and we're going to follow it, not figure out ways to manipulate it and get around it. And that's what they hate about the Constitution. And none of them ever do bear true faith and allegiance to it. So you're right. There's a huge difference in the quality of people that I see at Tea Party meetings versus any kind of liberal rally organization. At those things, I see thugs and angry, angry people.
Oh, definitely. Unbelievable, their attitude. They swear at you. They point fingers at you. They harass you. I have yet to see any Tea Party people do that. Honest. And I've been up to the march in Washington twice, and I said, going to Washington, that's enough. We need to bring these conventions and marches back to our own state and get involved with our own state. And that's why I decided that we should put on a Tea Party convention for each of our own states.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Hello,
now,
Pam. Dick Birnbach here.
Dick,
hello.
Go ahead.
excuse me. I'm not a very good Tea Partier. Because when people start to swear at me, I have a short fuse. So
well,
I definitely
want to go to a Democratic party meeting.
I did send you some emails, and I left you a phone message. There's a man by the name of Tom Garcia that definitely wants that booth.
Dick's not going to put you on the spot at all today.
I got that. Yeah, I also heard from somebody else about Tom Garcia, too. So I was trying to put the two messages together from Steve Hunter. Do you know Steve Hunter?
Yes.
He's Agenda 21 professional.
I'm gonna call Steve tonight, as a matter of fact.
Oh, okay. That's why. Well, see, I heard from him this morning on the phone about this, and then you sent me an email today about it, so I wanted to kind of get it coordinated since Steve Hunter is putting together an Agenda 21 program at the convention. This is what's going to be very exciting, is that there are going to be five specialists speaking about Agenda 21. In fact, Marco Rubio called them and said, you can put my name on your literature anytime you want, because this has to stop. And that's the first time that Marco Rubio has picked up the phone and personally called these guys. So we're hoping to have Marco Rubio at the convention along with several other people, including the governor and our attorney general.
Well, that seems like a good question,
Pam.
Go ahead, Dick.
Do you know who Dr. John Casey is?
Yes, I had a conversation about him this morning with Steve.
Okay, if you have space available, he would be a great person to speak.
Yeah, we do have some breakout rooms, though. He's already down for one of those breakout rooms through Steve.
Super, super.
And
I'm going to have him on Tom's show very shortly, too.
Yeah, we've got him coming up. We don't have a firm date yet. But anybody else notable that's going to be there speaking or even just attending that people should know about, Pam?
Well, we've got all our local congressmen that want to attend, and we've also got a group coming up, we hope, from Texas. They're the it's a group that gives you the – not only tells you what's wrong with our country, but gives us some tested and proven tools that were successful in the state of Texas in the 2010 elections. They're going to come and talk to us about that, which is very, very good. We also have Franz Kibru. He's going to be there. We also have the gentleman who wrote the book from Jekyll Island.
Oh.
He is going to be there.
Super.
We're also looking at a young lady who is just absolutely fabulous when it comes to the Constitution, and that is Chris Ann Hall. You listen to Chris Ann Hall for 2 hours, and it feels like 2 seconds. She's absolutely dynamite. Really, really
I talked to her
good
today.
Speaker. Oh, good.
And
yeah,
she wants to be
excellent
on Tom's show also.
Great. Yeah, she's excellent. You definitely want to listen to her. We also have some entertainment. We're hoping to have Bud Hedinger there as the MC.
Uh-huh.
And so we've got a lot of things in the works, and then we're having a senatorial debate on the Saturday, which is the 5th, and we'll have all the candidates running for Senate. That'll be there, including Mike McAllister. And then we're putting together a presidential debate for Sunday for all of our presidential candidates.
All right.
Is Mr. Marcus going to make it?
Yes, he's definitely going to be there. His wife told me that she was going to talk to him, and he was supposed to call me back, but I haven't talked to Lloyd yet, but she said count us in. So,
okay.
Definitely.
The last time I talked to him, he said he wanted to be there, but we had to, he, of course, has to set it up with you and stuff.
Right. So I did talk with his wife. She did call me, and I haven't heard back from her. Now I'm going up to Daytona Beach tomorrow to put some finishing touches on the convention. I'll be there for a couple of days and then coming back.
Very good.
Okay.
All right.
Super.
Well,
now the event is November the 4th through the 6th, and I tell people that this includes both both dinners, Friday and Saturday night, and both breakfasts on Saturday and Sunday morning. So it's all inclusive. It's
all right.
Really money well worth spent to learn what's going on and how to fix some of these problems, what we need to do personally as people to get to tell other people how to go about doing it, and your meals are all included. So that is just fabulous.
Yeah.
It's going to be a great convention. It is.
Yes. It looks like it's shaping up to be fabulous, and I'll tell people again, get your rooms early, because when there's a convention in Daytona, the hotels not only fill up quickly, but the prices jump up significantly. So get your room.
Well, we have special room rates of $99 at the Hilton right next door. That's a newly refurbished hotel, and it's right on the water. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a very nice hotel.
Perfect location. Yes.
I've been there, and $99
is
a good price.
Sheriff Mack is also flying in. To speak there.
I'm sorry, who?
Sheriff Mack.
Oh, yeah, Sheriff Mack, right, yeah. Absolutely.
Yes, he's going to be there. So, it's going to be an exciting convention that people are going to walk away with a lot of interesting information. For the first time, it looks like we're going to have a booth by the American Rifle. One of the
National Rifle Association?
Yes, NRA is going to be there, and they're going to be giving out information about what the government's working on to try and stop us from doing, such as the magazine that they're trying to push down our throats right now.
Uh-huh.
We'll have petitions out for that, things like that. We're also going to have a drawing for three types of guns for the whole event. So there's a lot happening, a lot,
awesome.
In 3 days.
Okay. Good. And I see on Friday things kick off with registration, et cetera, too. And I see at 4:15 you have Veterans Appreciation Reception. Awesome.
Yes,
so
we do.
Well, I'm going to let
all those who served.
Yeah. And I know several vet groups in the Central Florida area. I'll let them know about the convention and see if they have any desire to go, have a booth there. But and then
that'd
be great. You two are causing a problem here for me.
Yeah.
Do I wear my military hat from 3rd Division, or do I wear my Tea Party hat?
Wear a Tea Party
I
T-shirt
wear
and
one.
Wear your military hat.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, well, Pam, I understood that you needed to be out of here at 4:30 because you've got a lot of other stuff going on.
Yes, I have a Tea Party meeting tonight. We have 1,900 members in our Tea Party group here down by the villages. And
okay.
We meet tonight, and we have a big speaker coming in about voting. There's been a lot of changes in the laws regarding voting, so that's our big discussion for tonight. It's amazing about all the changes that they try to make every year to confuse the voters.
Yeah. Yeah, it is amazing. And
isn't it?
It can be a complicated process, but overall relatively simple. And when the Democrats say that we're trying to disenfranchise the poor by requiring an ID, you know, they don't ever seem to, and when I say they, there are a lot of people that are, on welfare and food stamps now, but they always seem to get them.
I don't see anybody standing out in the street with holding the sign saying, can't figure out how to get welfare, I need money. No, the people that can qualify for it do get it, unemployment, welfare, food stamps, and those, I've seen the forms for that stuff. Those are complicated processes. But if somebody wants to vote, they can go to their local there's voting locations all over the place now, whether there's somebody there at any given time. But you go to any local library, and you can get the information you need and the help from the librarians there to register you to vote. And in the state of Florida, this is important, in the state of Florida, anybody can get an ID card that looks just like a driver's license, but it's not a driver's license. It's just a Florida ID card. Anybody that's a citizen and resident of Florida can get one of those, and it just comes to you in the mail. It's quite easy to do. Again, you go to the library. The librarians can help you get that. You don't need a driver's license. All you need is a Florida ID, and they're very easy to get. And I think they only cost like $2, and they.
I think that's right. And this time around for the election, they are going to ask for picture IDs.
Yeah, well, they should.
So that's a new law. And before I forget, I want to mention that our Tea Party group is having a Stand with Israel event this coming Sunday up at the Market of Marion.
Okay.
There's a big event going on in Israel with Glenn Beck and a lot of people from Congress, a lot of other Tea Parties. And what we're doing is we're working right along with them and having our own event at the Market of Marion to stand right with Israel, and we'll have a lot of people there talking too. So anybody in the area that wants to come, please do. It's free of charge, and there's plenty of parking.
All right, Pam. Now, what's the website for your Tea Party group?
It's TriCounty, Tea Party, TEAPARTY, Florida, FLORIDA, at gmail.com. So it's TriCounty Tea Party, Florida, at gmail.com.
Okay, so that's an email address. Now, is there a website associated with the TriCounty?
Yes, it's TriCounty Tea Party. .org, and it's hyphenated with the Tri-County.
Okay, so somebody could, I've done it. Anybody can just Google it, Tri-County Tea Party .org, and you'll find the exact website with the hyphenations and everything, and they can go check that out.
Exactly, all our information is on there.
Awesome. All right, Pam, we'll keep up the good work. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you again in November.
All right, thank you very much for having me, and have a great day.
Okay,
November 4th through the 6th.
Yep, 14.
All right, bye-bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, that's good stuff. Now,
Let me make a few comments here first, okay?
Go ahead, Dick.
This lady by the name of Sandy Adams, I was at a House meeting where she was trying to explain why she voted the way she did, because she upset a lot of her constituents.
Okay.
At this meeting, she told me that I was talking to her privately, and she said, I will explain why I voted, and I think you'll understand. My comment to her was, okay, I will listen to you. However, do not pour water on my boot and tell me it's raining, because right now I don't trust too many of you people in Washington, but I will hear you out and see what you have to say. I then asked her a question. I said, can you tell me the law or where in the Constitution the president has the power of executive order? And as she turned away, she said, the presidents have been doing that for a long time.
Yeah.
Okay, now she sent me a letter. Okay, I just received this today.
Okay.
Article 2, Section 3 of the Constitution states, he shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed, according to her, which allows the president vague executive power.
Yeah, well, here's what it does.
I don't see how that gives him executive power.
Here's what he can do. He can write an executive order to ensure that the laws are faithfully executed. If, say, for example, Congress passes a law that says the EPA will do this, this, and this to any corporation that emits, CO2.
Right.
Okay, that's an example. So then he could write an executive order that says to the EPA, Congress passed this law. He doesn't have to, but he could. But see, here's what happens. We have presidents, particularly this one in power right now, who write executive orders that have nothing to do with law. For example,
right.
when he directed the EPA to increase its regulations and regulatory authority, it wasn't based on any law that was passed. So he's not faithfully executing and ensuring that the laws of the land are being executed. He's creating new laws is what he's doing. So there is no authority to write executive orders, but in the process of ensuring that the law, existing law, is being properly carried out, yes, then he could write an executive order. But to just write an executive order, see, so there's two types we're saying here. He's enforcing the law. He's ensuring the law is enforced. But to write an executive order telling the departments to do things, he has no authority to do unless it's based on law. And it's interesting to note that she would say that and then make that blanket executive orders. It's not blanket executive orders. It's only to ensure that the departments under the executive branch are complying with the law. Now, it's interesting that his one enumerated power when it comes to the departments in the executive branch is that he can ask a question. He can ask for an opinion in writing from the heads of the departments. Now,
yes.
if he has an enumerated power, in other words, a power that says you can do this, because the 10th Amendment says if it doesn't say it, you can't do it, that says you can ask for an opinion, don't you think it would be necessary to then also have an enumerated power that says, and you can write executive orders, or you can order the departments to do things? He doesn't have that authority. So she's partially correct and partially wrong on that. And so
What a politician does. She's sidestepping the issue, actually.
Yeah, yeah. And that's one of the things that, the reason politicians want to sidestep that particular issue is because when their party's in power in the executive branch, they want to be able to write executive orders telling the departments what to do, and regardless of what Congress has issued as law. So now we're going to talk about some constitutional things here. But the first thing I wanted to ask, it has to do with the Constitution, is, Dick, Paula, can anybody tell me where in the Constitution the authority to grow the power of Congress is, the process, where the authorization is given to grow the power of Congress? And it's not a trick question, and you don't have to know the answer. Obviously, I know the answer because I put the question together. But any guesses?
I don't understand what you mean by grow.
Expand the power of Congress. In other words, Congress's power given to them under
right.
the Constitution had some original intent, correct? There was original
yes.
intent from our founders to say, here is your power and it's limited. That was the intent of
yes.
the Constitution, was to be the limiting factor on their power.
Is that the 10th Amendment?
Go ahead.
Is that the 10th Amendment?
The 10th Amendment says if it doesn't say it, you can't do it. So how could they grow their power if they so wanted to grow their power, or somebody wanted to give them more power? And here's what it boils down to. It's the amendment process. The people.
Okay.
The only way they can grow their, expand their power and the meaning of their, and the intent of their power under the Constitution would be with an amendment. Now, the courts seem to think that they can grow that power. And if you look at Article 3 of the Constitution, which talks about the judicial power of the United States, nowhere in there does it say that the judiciary, the executive branch of our government, made up of the Supreme Court and federal judges and circuit courts, has the authority to grow and expand the power of Congress. So, and the reason I bring this up is we know that the 11th Circuit Court just ruled that Obamacare is unconstitutional, correct? You saw that in the
yes.
– now, I'm going to read to you what the judge – the dissenting judge had to say. And, of course, it was a Clinton appointee and a Democrat. Here's what he had to say. And we had a guest lined up today that was a judge, and he had to cancel over the weekend. But I want to get a judge on here and ask him this. How does a judge make a statement like this without exposing, and it truly exposing, what their real intent is? Here's what he said. The majority, and he's talking about the two other judges on the panel, has ignored the undeniable fact that Congress's commerce power has grown exponentially over the two past centuries. So Congress's commerce power has grown. Okay, The fact that it's grown means it's something that it wasn't to begin with. Would you agree with that, Dick?
Yes.
Okay, so it's expanded. How has it expanded? It has expanded. See, he doesn't mention this in his little statement. It hasn't expanded because Congress expanded it or the people expanded it, and Congress can't expand its own power. It's because the courts expanded it. Now, I don't know of anywhere in the Constitution that says one branch of government can expand the power of another branch. There's no authorization whatsoever.
No.
But here's what the courts have done. They've reinterpreted the Constitution to give it new meaning, and that has expanded the power. And he says it right in his statement. He's basically admitting it. The majority has ignored the undeniable fact that Congress's commerce power has grown, and not just grown, but exponentially over the past two centuries. So he's admitting in his statement that Congress's authority and power is not what was intended under the Constitution and our founders. It's not what was intended. So would you say that this guy has violated his oath of office and his colleagues by altering the Constitution through judicial rulings?
Of course.
Absolutely.
Is.
And I've read this on the air before, but I'm going to read it again because it's worth noting. In Henry Adams' History of the United States, 1801 to 1809, and I also have his other book, The History of the United States, 1809 to 1807, or 1809 to 1817. He says this about Virginia Republicanism, which was the party of Thomas Jefferson, that were strict constitutionalists. Now, there's arguments, and I'll argue all day with people, that you know over time they kind of pushed away from that and they turned into Federalists. Not true, not true. But in any case, you know, there's some truth to it, but not the kind of truth that liberals want you to believe. In any case, he said the essence of Virginia Republicanism, and that would be really what the Tea Party is today, lay in a single maxim: the government shall not be the final judge of its own powers. But what this judge, the statement he made is that the government is the judge of its own powers, that the judiciary is the judge of government's powers. It's supposed to be the people, and that's where our Constitution was set up. Here are the rules, and you follow them. If you don't like them, you can make an amendment, you know, offer up an amendment to the Constitution and see if the majority of states will sign off on it. Now, when he said for the last two centuries, apparently he does know history well enough, but he doesn't want to discuss the thoroughness of history. But he did say, when he said over the last two centuries, so you say last two centuries, wow, that takes us back to early 1800s, right? Well, in the history of the United States, 1801 to 1809, this goes back to before even that time frame. We're talking back in the late 1790s and 1800, even before Jefferson was elected. Here's what Henry Adams had to say about the judiciary. Now, remember, this is a time when the founders were still alive. In fact, James Madison was the president after Thomas Jefferson, and he drafted the Constitution. It was there when it was being debated. And many of the others that were there and signed the Constitution for their state and represented their states there and debated and discussed and helped craft the Constitution that we have today were all still alive. And yet here was the attitude of the Federalist judiciary. And here's what he says. To this axiom, and that is that government shall not be the final judge of its own powers, to this axiom of republicanism, the Federalist judiciary, and that's the problem, they were all Federalists, so basically today's Democrats, all on the judiciary, opposed what amounted to a flat negative. Chief Justice Marshall and his colleagues meant to interpret the Constitution as seemed to them right, and they admitted no appeal from their decision. Now, how do you interpret the Constitution as you think it ought to be or should mean when the authors who are right there alive and can tell you what it means is that's the problem with our judiciary? And so when he said for 200 years, he's absolutely right. For 200 years, the judiciary, people like him, have been interpreting the Constitution as they see fit, not as the founders who tried to create a security blanket, if you will, for us, a security net, a shield of armor to protect us from these kinds of people. That's what it was meant to do. So the very kinds of people that we were meant to be protected from the Constitution are the very ones that are making these statements that, oh, yeah, government's got more power than it, you know, Congress has gained more power over the years. Yeah, because morons like you, Judge, have given it to them, violating your oath of office and violating the Constitution. So I thought it was very interesting that this guy pretty blatantly made that statement that the Congress's power has grown over the past two centuries. And I'm thinking, how does it get the authority to grow? Now, we've had quite a few amendments to the Constitution, but most of them don't focus on Congress's power. In fact, I'm off the top of my head, I don't think any of them focus on Congress's power other than taxing us. So there shouldn't be an exponential growth, but there has, and that's the problem we're in today. And that's why people like us, people that are forming Tea Party groups and going to Tea Party groups, are fed up with the government grabbing more and more power. And I'll read you a Thomas Jefferson quote that is very applicable, and this is the danger of government grabbing more and more power and dumbass judges like this telling us that it's A-okay for them to give more and more power to Congress to control our lives. What has destroyed liberty and the rights of man in every government which has ever existed under the sun? The generalizing and concentrating all cares and power into one body. So this judge represents exactly that, concentrating the cares and power into one body, the federal government. It was meant to be spread around to the states, and some of the states might not do so good. Others would do better. That was okay as long as they weren't concentrated in the hands of one body, and that's where we're headed, and we've got to reverse course, or it will destroy our government and nation. We'll end up in 50 years, 20 years, whatever it is, with a whole new government because it'll collapse, and somebody will say, well, that didn't work. It didn't work. You're a car man, Dick. What if somebody pulled a wheel off of their car and kind of trashed their transmission and drained the oil out of the engine, then started the car up and drove down the road, and doesn't get too far before, you know, the engine blows and destroyed the steering system. And they get out of their car and go, well, this was a terrible choice for a car. It just doesn't work. We got to start over. Well, they destroyed the car before they ever even tried driving it. That's the insanity of this. The liberals are going to claim that our Constitution doesn't work and can't protect us. There's the proof. When they destroy it and the nation, and that's how they operate. That's how liberals operate. They destroy something, and they go, ah, see, that didn't work. Well, you destroyed it. Oh, no, we tried to make it better. Yeah, that's the problem. Any thoughts on that, Dick?
What I see, and this is probably going to sound a little crazy, but you look at the judges that try and interpret what a law means, okay? It's like Johnny goes up to Mommy and says, Mommy, can I go to Walmart and buy some candy? And Mommy says, no. So Johnny goes outside and says, hey, Timmy, Mommy says I can't go to Walmart and buy candy, so let's go to Target. She didn't say I couldn't go to Target.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's the kind of stuff they do. You know, they'll just...
This is what they're doing. I mean, you being a police officer, you look at a law and 90% of them are very clear. Can you twist any law? Yes, you can. You can interpret it any way you want to, but that isn't the meaning of the law.
Yeah.
And I don't know what we can do with these clowns that think they are judges and know the law when they try and twist them around to say something they weren't meant to say.
Yeah. Well, that is the problem. And Jefferson warned about it, and he tried to do something about it in his second administration, but it was a more difficult time for him. He probably could have done it in his first administration, but he chose not to because he felt like he had so much power in terms of, you know, he always went to the Congress and said, here's what I need. He didn't write executive orders. He didn't write any executive orders. He just said, this is what I need. And he was very, very popular. He was still very popular with the people in the second administration, but within his own party and within the government, he had lost a fair bit of power. And so when he proposed a couple things. One was term limits for federal judges. And it was like, ain't going to happen. He also proposed, not too many people know this, emancipation for slaves. In other words, the abolition of slavery. And that didn't get any traction. So people go, Thomas Jefferson, the slave owner. Yeah, he may have owned slaves. He's probably the guy you wanted to work for. If you're going to have to be a slave, work for him, because he was actually treated them quite well. But he proposed a constitutional amendment, and he was serious about it. to the Congress, and the Congress debated around and tabled it or said no, and it didn't go anywhere. So he was the first president to actually try and abolish slavery, but he doesn't ever get any credit for that. And so there are some things that he could have done maybe in his first term that he wasn't able to, and by his second term he really didn't have the political capital to make it happen. So later on in life, before he passed on, he reiterated, about 20 years after his presidency, he reiterated that the judiciary is going to destroy this country, and you got to get it under control. And the way to do that is to put some form of term limit on these federal judges, including the Supreme Court. We need to be able to get rid of them when they're not doing their job properly. And, you know, of course, a replacement to that particular judge has to be confirmed by the Senate, so there is a process involved. There's not like the president's making these unilateral decisions, but what would happen is the president couldn't get rid, and this was his proposition, was the president can't just say, you're out. No, he'd just say, I'm not renewing your next term, and I'm going to get somebody else. So they'd fill out their term, whatever that would be, and I can't remember what he proposed, if it was 4 years. But he really felt strongly, and he was right. And we can see this judicial activism that has marched us to the point where Congress has all kinds of authority that was never intended, and really it really reduces the other enumerations of power to meaningless enumerations of power. And, you know, Hamilton said that. Why do we have specific enumerations of power if they were meant to be generalized? They weren't. It would be absurd. And so, again, we've gotten away from the intent because we've got people today, and unfortunately in both parties, but the majority in the Democrat Party, that don't like the constraints the Constitution puts on them as politicians and as representatives and senators and presidents. They don't like those constraints. So they've used the judiciary to kind of blur the lines and change the meaning and change the intent. And that's why we get into this kind of trouble. We end up with a huge debt. And Steve had called in earlier was absolutely right. Dwight Eisenhower was the first president in many, many years to not raise the debt ceiling in any way or ask for an increase in debt. He balanced the budget, and since then we've been raising it and raising it. Which brings me to something I want to, as we close up today, and then I'll let you guys give me your final words, but there are a couple items I want to talk about because they don't really get fair play. Ronald Reagan, and we'll go over this a little bit more on Wednesday, but his Economic Recovery Act that he signed into law in 1981, August of 1981, was the largest tax cut in American history. And I see all over the place. There's a great article here in it's actually USA Today. It's a column on the Reagan stimulus versus the Obama one. And this was printed, let's see. I don't see a date on here. But that's the name of it if you want to find it. And it was written by Paul Kengore of Grove City College in Pennsylvania. But it's called The Reagan Stimulus versus the Obama one. Now here, and I went and searched because I knew I'd find them. I found all kinds of articles that say Reagan cut taxes and there wasn't enough revenue coming in, and that was the problem. Cutting taxes doesn't work. Okay, I'm going to read a very important line here. Tax revenues under Reagan rose from $599 billion, so basically we'll call it $600 billion, in 81 to nearly $1 trillion in 89. So tax revenues went up. But here's the problem for the liberals. It's never enough. So they're going to lie about tax cuts dropping revenues when, in fact, they went up because the economy recovered, more revenue came in, and we were up to $1.4 trillion more than it was when he took over, okay? So that's an outright lie to say that tax cuts cut back on revenue. Certainly, if there hadn't been tax cuts, we could suppose that if the economy recovered anyway, there would have been more revenue. But that's the problem. Will the economy in a recession recover? So Reagan inherited a recession that was worse than Obama's, quote, inheritance. And we heard that at the beginning of the show. He's always about, oh, I inherited something. You know what? If you're going to be a big crybaby about this, don't take the job. But you know what he said in 2009 in one of the speeches? He said, it's my job as president, which is not true. It's my job as president to turn this economy around. Well, there's nothing in the Constitution that gives him the authority or power to turn an economy around. Yes, through leadership, he can help Congress and the Senate come up with a plan that can turn the economy around. But it's not his job. It's not designated anywhere in writing anywhere that his job. But that's what he said. Well, I'll tell you what. If it is his job to turn the economy around, he gets an F. But he won't accept that F because it's always somebody else. It's like if you're at school, Paula, and you get a bad grade on a test, you go, it was not my fault because Susie didn't help me study. Or, you know, so-and-so didn't give me the answers. He's always got an excuse. But the fact is this. Cutting taxes, revenue went up because the economy recovered. But what has this president done? He's not cut taxes. He wants to raise taxes. He's done everything he can to harm business, and I'm going to get to that in a second. And therefore, we've stalled in this recession. So he did the opposite of what Reagan did. So Reagan, who's hated by liberals, got the economy turned around and a booming economy that lasted for many, many years beyond his two terms. This president has put us into a worse recession. So there's nobody in the Democrat Party that can claim that Obama is doing a good job. All he had to do was follow what Reagan did, but he refused to. Now, the other thing we'll talk about on Wednesday is the debt and how the debt ceiling did go up, and our national debt went up and fluctuated, but our national debt went up under Reagan. We'll talk about why that happened and also the lies that the Democrats are putting out about him raising taxes and raising – first of all, he cut them significantly at the beginning of his term, and if taxes went up over time, the Democrats controlled the House. And whose enumerated power is it to tax? Democrats. And we'll talk about a very good story that outlines how he got bamboozled, number one. Like, it's not that he got tricked. He got lied to. And number two, he had some significant pressure put on him when it looked like we might dip into a recession late in his or in his second term, and he went against his what he really wanted to do, and that was not raise taxes, but he was so concerned about the economy, he went ahead and raised taxes along with cutting the deficit as well, and some tax cuts, but and the form of the taxes that were raised were not raising marginal tax rates, but rather eliminating some loopholes and other things like that. So we'll talk about that, how he actually got heavily pressured and put into a box, and he did what he did because he thought it was best for the time. But in general terms, no, he was absolutely opposed to raising taxes, and he proved that raising taxes or cutting taxes would help a stalled economy. So this president has done the opposite of Obama, and we're paying the price for that. But now when it comes to businesses, I'm going to read a headline to you. Obama wants to – this was back in May 14th. Obama wants to expedite oil drilling. Wants to expedite oil drilling. Okay. But the impact on gasoline, yeah, it's always – it won't, you know, have a big impact or whatever. But here's the Obama expedited process. Feeling political pressure coming from upset voters, President Obama on May 14th came up with something. He announced new measures aimed at expediting the leasing and permitting process that will make it somewhat easier and faster for oil companies to have all what it takes to start drilling and actually find some new oil. Okay, here's the headline yesterday or a few days ago. A judge on Friday threw out Obama administration rules that sought to slow down expedited environmental review of oil and gas drilling on federal land. So we get the administration telling us that they're going to put rules in place to expedite research and evaluation of environmental review and the paperwork process. And then, because some people file some lawsuits about those so-called rules that are going to expedite things, we find out that the rules weren't intended to expedite, but slow down. He says one thing, does something else. So, big lie. Big lie. And I've got an article written by, I'd have to go into my email because I didn't pull it up, about 10 lies of this, 10 you know, biggest lies of this administration of lately, and we'll go over that on Wednesday as well. But you can see that the administration says one thing and does another thing. Oh, yeah. And so he admits it himself when he talks to us and says, yeah, we need to expedite, you know, oil drilling and exploration, that kind of thing. So we're going to work with, you know, I'm going to work with the EPA to make sure that happens. And then we find out that a judge, a federal judge, is telling the Obama administration the rules that you've put together to slow down expedited review and drilling aren't constitutional. You don't have the authority to do that. And so we're going to go back essentially to the Bush-era expedited oil and gas drilling provisions. So there's your big lie for the day and how this administration is not doing anything like what Ronald Reagan did to turn around an economy in just 2 years. He's had almost 3 years now, and look where we're at. We're much worse off than we were, and the markets are very nervous, and we've just had a downgrading of our credit rating as a nation. This guy is a disaster. I don't know how anybody can spin this into that he's doing a good job. The only thing they can do, and this is what you talked about at the beginning of the show, Paula, is say it's not his fault. It's not his fault. He's the president. It's not his job to fix these things. It's not his fault. It's what he inherited. Look, what he inherited was a much smaller debt. And I've got, I believe, the sound clip, but I've got also the quote of Obama and the date and time he gave it, and we'll do this on Wednesday as well, where he said in his one of his speeches early on in his presidency that at the end of my first term, and this might have been when he was campaigning, I don't remember, but I've got it. I've got the quote. By the end of my first term, I will have cut the debt, not annual deficit, but the national debt. He said the debt in half. And by the time his presidency is over, our national debt is going to be virtually doubled. So there's the biggest, probably the biggest lie that he's told to us is that he pledged, and he used the word pledge, I pledge to cut the national debt in half, and he's actually doubled it. Now what they'll say is, well, he had to save the economy. Well, that's not what he said he was going to do, though. So he completely misunderstood what he was getting into when he said that, and therefore he had to do the opposite. That's the excuse they're going to use. Then he's incompetent. He misunderstood what he was getting into with a bad economy that he inherited, quote, inherited, and yet he had no clue as to what it was going to take to fix that. So the bottom line is he'll say whatever it takes. He'll say whatever it takes, which amounts to lie after lie after lie. All right, guys, I'll give you the final word. Paula.
Well, just a shout-out to the family members who lost their loved ones, the 30 soldiers who died in that Afghanistan helicopter crash at the beginning of the month. That pretty much, I mean, we've lost countless numbers of people as the war has gone on, but this high amount is just, It's a shock, and I'm wondering when it's going to stop. I think a lot of people want to know when it's going to stop. Our hearts go out to those who have lost their loved ones, and we are waiting for all of you to come home to us, and that's in all services. I'm not just going to pinpoint one today. We pray for you all on a daily basis to come home to us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Amen to that, Paula.
Thank you, Paula. All right, Dick, you get the final word today.
I can't top what Paula just said. I think that's a beautiful note to end the show on.
It is. All right, well, we'll see you folks Wednesday. And
Wednesday.
I'm sorry, say that again?
Wednesday, Dick. Yes.
Wednesday, yeah, Wednesday.
Yeah.
I'm flying out to Chile tonight, and I'll be broadcasting live from Santiago, Chile, where it is supposed to be snowing tomorrow. I'm not looking forward to that. I actually had a Sao Paulo trip, and I traded with another pilot, thinking, well, it's been kind of cool in Brazil and Sao Paulo these days. Yeah, this week it's going to be up in the 70s and 80s in Sao Paulo, and it's going to be in the 40s and 50s down in Chile. So I made a bad choice there. But anyway, whatever. So I'll and there's no heat in the rooms. A lot of these hotels in South America have air conditioning for the summertime, but they have no heat in the wintertime. So you're at the mercy of whatever they set the hallway temperature to, and that's it. That's all you get. So I'll be packing sweats and gloves and a hoodie and all that stuff and staying inside.
I will sit out on my lawn chair in the sun and think about you.
Great, Dick. Thanks. I appreciate it. Be sure and call in and tell me that you're enjoying the 90% humidity weather while I tell you that I'm enjoying the cool weather down there. So anyway. All right, everybody. Well, thanks for joining me today, and we'll see you again on Wednesday, 4 p.m.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.